Okay, this is side two of session 18, September 25th, 2006. So you're saying, why is sex a big deal? And we'll say in the United States.
Yeah, the censors have done a really effective job of censoring sexual content on television. But violence, they've totally, violence is not even, nobody even thinks about it anymore.
Okay. McLuhan says that when you brought in writing in phonetic space, you're starting to highlight this visual sense away from the other senses, in isolation from the other senses. So with this abstract space, visuality is the ground and the dominant numbing. Therefore, it's antithetical or not too keen on the other senses. And since sex is a very tactile process, involves all the senses. It's an involving thing.
So does violence or being tortured to death.
Beg your pardon?
So does violence or being tortured to death. Violence or being tortured or killed or whatever, which we see a lot of on TV, that's very tactile.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kinetic. It's explosive.
The thing that's occurring to me is that violence has to do with reestablishing your territory or getting your possessions back or defending your possessions. Where if everybody's having sex on TV, it promotes the idea of promiscuity, which is like sort of antithetical to possessiveness, because people don't sort of couple up and sort of own each other if they can just run off and be with somebody else whenever they want to. So.
But you said promotes the idea of sex.
I think it ties into possessions.
That's where visual space, visual man is the one who possesses. Primitive cultures don't own anything. Remember, the natives here in North America, they didn't own the land, and they were willing to share it.
Yeah.
But visual space Gutenberg man said, no, we need this, own this part. And the other family owns that part.
Right.
We're going to own this whole area eventually.
The two of us are going to get married and own each other. And
right. And that's what visual space is obsessed with connecting. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that leads into kinetic space, which is the interplay of muscular connections. Now, the interesting use of tactility. In a tactile culture, the whole global village is tactile. Then you have the different cultures' response. And some cultures are more tactile than others. So they have a tactile version in response to the electric tactility. The American response to the tactile environment is kinetic. And kinetic is abrasive interface. You're right to say that tactile is violent, because tactility, McLuhan defined as the hard surfaces interacting and overlapping, the hard spaces of all the senses that tactility molds. So I just want to go back to that about how each culture in the 20th century is like a variation of tactility. And you'll see this on page 136 of the book From Cliché to Archetype, where he talks about the tactile bias of the Russians. It's iconic tactile, whereas the Germans is a tactile interface, and the Spanish is proprioceptive. There's different kinds, and then the the Japanese are the most tactile. So you have different kinds of tactility. The further you get away from the Western print society, historically had these different semi-tactile cultures, and then they respond differently to the electric tactility. And so America, being a visual kinetic culture, it responds to the tactile interface with dancing and hyperkinetic violence. For example, I once talked to these Japanese people, and they didn't understand why Americans were violent. They didn't think they were violent, or any other culture was. And when I explained to them that that's due to the kinetic contact, kinetic cultures need to bump into each other. And that's the mechanical industrial culture. And they like that. And think of football. Think of hockey. Contact sports. Once they understood what I was saying, they said, oh, that makes sense. It's not that America is violent. It is kinetic.
Mm-hmm.
And kinetic is abrasive interface. And that gets hyper when you're inside the weird relational interfacing of tactility.
Yeah.
Tactility defined as that which organizes the different sensory spaces. So let's go back to visual space. So visual space comes in with the Greek alphabet, gets solidified with the printing press. And visual space is anti-sensory involvement. This is where you get the idea of the Puritans and then later the Victorians. They were considered prudish or not into multi-sensory involvement. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is sex. Sex, for as McLuhan would say, for visual man is heady juice. Whereas for non-literate, preliterate people, sex is like a cup of coffee. It's not a release as it is for a visual man who eventually needs the anti-environment of multi-sensuous involvement. So sex is a very important, heavily policed activity because it's really needed as an anti-environment. Not the case in tribal societies,
mm-hmm.
non-visual societies.
Mm-hmm.
There they allow the children to have casual sex. Now there's different permutations of that once you get into managed cultures. But generally, very primitive cultures aren't very upset about youth having sex. For example, you know, the famous story about Captain Cook or any of these Western explorers that went to Tahiti and Indonesia and those places, they went nuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got laid three times a day.
Yeah.
And it was not a problem from the locals' point of view because it was a natural expression of a multi-sensuous culture.
Right.
Now, what happens in the...
Now, it's coming back. I just saw they were doing one of the news stations, CNN, was doing some commentary. Fox News was taking a stance on teenage sexuality, and they put some kind of website up on the subject, and basically they were saying, have all the sex you want, just practice protection. So the notion of going out and being promiscuous as teenagers is now being sanctioned by the establishment. That shows how far we are into the imploded electric stage.
Yeah, you have the electric tribal communism of the last 70, 80 years has wiped out the nuclear family. And in the United States, which is based as a meme on family values and the property-owning family, the visual space family, right, the nuclear family, that's been eroded and eroded and eroded. But in the media, you call the establishment, they must make the image of America's meme. And that's how you become president. You're born-again, Republican, print, Bible-thumping representative of family values. And that's your job. When you're an American, you represent your meme, your cultural bias. But the eroding of the visual basis of American culture explains the increased violence, but never the allowing of sex in the, I guess you call it the family space, because there's all kinds of channels now for pornography. But really, the American visual space culture is no longer here anymore. And what you're just citing is a good example. If Fox is for this, then they
represent the conservatives.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you don't see explicit sexual content on TV. It's implied every way they can possibly figure out how to imagine it's implied.
Yeah, but actually, there's quite a lot of sex compared to 30 years ago on mainstream TV. But remember, on the TV and the private channels, you get all you want.
Yeah.
So what is this interesting space? We don't have the three networks dominating, but they seem to imply there's mainstream media. But most people aren't engaged in mainstream media. That's why, you know, Katie Kirk is a news director now for CBS, you know, the anchor. I just heard today that the ratings aren't making. She's just not connecting.
Oh.
But nobody's looking at the news. I mean, you hear journalists talk about this. They say, I'm not going to wait around till 6:30 to get the news. I'm processing news on the Internet 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, so why wait until the evening? So the idea of a mainstream media is really vague now. So what remains is the DNA of the culture, the hyperkinetic meme. And this is what, you know, Samuel Huntington of the Traveler Commission's idea of the clash of civilization is, the clash of media-generated spaces,
mm-hmm.
as memes within the Android meme, which is amic. the actual reality we live in is not a world of ideas. It's a world of sensory stimulation and titillation and all the senses in hyper mode.
Yeah.
So the only way, you know, if you're an American adult and you're raising kids, I think you try to believe in imparting an American identity to them. And it's really diluted, but people persist on maintaining their culture, right?
Yeah.
And so you would teach some American ideas. But the actual environment we live in really undermines. That's why education has so many problems. And why the kids are good in modern media, but don't have the values of the old kinetic visual space meme down anymore.
Yeah.
But they have the new post tactile values. They got that. They're in touch. They're instant messaging. So something, it's like, where is the space that kinetic American meme is? Where is it? And as you just cited, Fox, the last bastion of it, is weakening. So if you don't have Fox, you don't have it. But it is still around somewhere, and let's call that a meme. And a meme is like it's not an idea. It's the mental part of being, or the non-physical part, whatever it's made up of.
The meme?
Yeah.
Well, the meme is it's a little hologram. It embodies some sort of cultural idea or value.
But it's based on material effects. You know, it comes out of matter, in McLuhan's term.
It's like a homeopathic retrieval, a meme. I mean, it's a condensing or coalescing of some cultural attribute down into a focus or a point.
Right. A meme is tactility, almost. It is a homeopathic replay. That's the point. I'm trying to say, where is the meme of America? It was built on kinetic industrial space and the printing press, but that's long gone. But there still is a meme of something.
Well, it's being propped up as content, but we don't know if it's what's... I'm not sure that it's really the hidden ground anymore.
No, it isn't, but it's there as an afterimage.
Yeah.
So the word meme is interesting, you know, because I'm trying to say it can't be limited to...
See, I still identify...
Wait, let me finish this. It can't be limited to the notion of idea. But it seems to people to be an idea. But
yeah.
Then McLuhan points out the idea is an effect of material media. So what were you going to say?
Well, I still identify myself as an American because I was born as an American and indoctrinated into the whole American thing. You're a little more polymorphic because you've been in Paris and Canada and now you're living in the United States. But you wouldn't identify with being American as much as someone who was indoctrinated, born into the whole system, and told that that's what you are.
Well, I identified with being a French person, you know, when I was young. But the being working in the solar government, which is working with big business, and being tribal, we soon didn't think in terms of cultural identity.
Well, I wouldn't either if I was an international business guy.
That's right.
I'd be thinking of enhancing my own empire. And I would see the world as my playground.
Right.
But I'm not an international businessman.
Here's the point. McLuhan's urging to you, the average citizen who doesn't see themselves as big business, you are way more involved in a discarnate state than the big business. Because the big business guy is running around modulating the old media. But you every day are engaged with radio and TV at the rate that you imbibe it. And you need to perceive that you aren't an American.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You don't need to. It only is if you think of your American media, American kinetic space that you're conditioned by. And now you make $10 million, you travel around the world for 5 years, and you get used to other cultures, you learn language. You'll start the memories of your American environment will erode a bit, and you'll have acquired these new memories and images. But that's still cultural. That's still like your body, the chemical body. And learning languages and clothing. But all the time you've done that, for 5 years on your $10 million, you've been nowhere. You've been listening to your Walkman or your iPod or on your computer in the actual environment you live in, which is not a chemical body. Right?
Yeah.
So the point is that nobody gets is able to be an American, so to speak. Big business or not. That's the perceptual point McLuhan's making.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is going to wipe out media, then you come to this paper. It's really is his main point, that if you try to organize the content of the media, you miss the real massage. And if you're literate, you think there's a difference between form and content. So reading this paragraph again, this is the basic idea of McLuhan, what he's known for. He's the guy who pointed out that the content wasn't as important as the form, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the form of electric media is very different from the form of print media. This is a threat to our culture, or it's a boon, depending on what media you relate to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, I want to read it again. Just so this is page 35. The next paragraph is going to spin off from that. The next section,
mm-hmm.
because there's many implications of what this paragraph says. Because if you went around just spouting off the form is more important than the content, anybody brought up any issues, you wouldn't be able to talk about it unless you had some rhetorical mnemonic devices. You know,
the way I see it is the content configures itself around the form.
Yeah,
doesn't make the content trivial. It just means that it's reorganizing itself around the new form.
Well, what do you mean trivial? I mean, McLuhan later said the user was the content, and he said people were always and will remain the content. Humans are the content. But that's only a small part of your makeup, he said.
The content of the media environment.
The content adjusts. Now, those that identify with the older content are going to be upset with that. They're not going to accept the new content.
Mm-hmm.
So the old people liked jazz, they didn't like rock. Right? But rock took over. Jazz became ghettoized.
Right.
Or forced to play in Europe. The point is that a lot of tension comes out. It just to blindly say, oh, the content adjusts. No, that affects people's psyche and sociology.
Mm-hmm.
That'll create violence.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and so then you argue over the content adjustment and missing the cause that made the content adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have to adjust if you turned the media off. Or the medium, the new medium.
Mm-hmm.
You turned it off. Okay?
Right.
So let's read this and then go into the next paragraph. For lack of observing so central an aspect of the TV image... So he's been describing, this is on page 274, there's a section before that where he's describing the tactile aspect of the TV image. He says, for lack of observing that, the central aspect of the TV image, the critics of program content have talked nonsense about TV violence. The spokesmen of censorious views, that's content censorship, are typical semi-literate, book-oriented individuals. Now what he's saying there is that the truly literate person knows the grammar of the print effect. It's only the 20th century semi-literate people who are fanatic about their values of literacy, which is like a meme, and they think and are emphasis and are emphatic about content because they're book-oriented individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is the medium that separates form from content because speech is the content. It's like the first medium inside another medium. I mean, ESP or mental dance is the content of speech. So you could say there's a content there, but it's a subtle membrane. With writing and then print and then the phonetic alphabet and then print, you have a real schizoid effect. Speech is the content of a visual medium. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no content in pre-literate societies. Just like there's no ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The spokesmen of censorious views are...
Well, there's speech in tribal societies. There is speech in tribal societies.
Right. And
so there's mental dance. There's ESP. So I don't know if you want to call that idea or say that that's not idea.
That's not idea. That's a very subtle, tactile interplay going on.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to distinguish. You would have to stop speech and write it down to start to thread the difference. You know what I mean? Unweave the difference. That's the point, is that ideas.
By the time we have speech, we are moving into the realm of concept. Otherwise, there's no use for speech. Speech is symbolic. A word symbolizes something.
But we don't think that way until we have a writing society where you can write things down and have your first look at them, because in a speech society, it's all flow. And you can't stop it. But when you write it down, you freeze it. Then you have your first look at what you've been experiencing in the speech society. Then you begin to think of content and ideas. But it's a result of moving into new medium.
Mm-hmm.
And you look back and say, oh, we did have ideas in the speech society. But that's because you're looking back from the effect of writing in the phonetic alphabet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Plato was. It was speech and dialogue.
Yeah, people who do speech, who are only in the world of speech, don't think about thinking.
That's right. That's very important. As McLuhan said, Descartes came along with the notion of thinking about thinking. They don't have a concept. Their thinking is in their breath.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a
breath. Breath is sometimes associated with the spirit.
Yeah. And the ancestors. It's a museum of all their previous tribal experience called the ancestors, and it's still there with them. So they don't want to upset the ancestors. And that's animism. You know, they see spirits all around them.
Sounds much simpler and more alive or integrated or less neurotic in a way. You know,
no,
start thinking about thinking too much, we start getting, I think, neurotic.
No, you just have to be aware of the medium that makes you do that. Like, we are the most alive society that's ever been right now. The most utopian society in terms of experience. I'd hate to be in a little primitive little society and have to talk to 25 people, and it would be a unique experience, but you would be just limited to that. Now you can do that on a weekend retreat. Go to a retreat and meditate, be with small people for a week or so, and explore the astral energies. But then you can leave that,
mm-hmm.
and you can go into other bodies. It's just we don't have a public language to explain the situation we're in. All you have is content, cultural content, arguing with other cultural content about which medium is a more important experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the interplay, as Finnegan's Wake celebrates, of all the media that is...
Well, there seems to be a hierarchy in the minds of people who get paid to work in the media, and it goes something like radio, television, movies. You know, those, in terms of salaries, in terms of what's deemed to be, you know, significant.
Right. That's based on the cultural bias. I mean... They don't have that kind of... Till recently, did they have salaries in China?
Oh, I don't know.
They are now.
I'm sure they are now.
But in the early 60s Cuba, the only guy who was on TV was Castro. And he'd be on for hours, teaching, being a teacher, you know, educator, politician, spiritual guru. That's what happens, and that would be in the radio and the early TV situation. That's what Chavez is, radio guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We were talking about what was it? The image you were just bringing up. The different cultures, and there is no idea of freedom in pre-literate societies. That's why McLuhan's word involvement is really good. It's participatory involvement. And what is the punishment? Exile in those kind of societies.
Mm-hmm.
Sent out to be on your own, which is the worst thing that can happen. Right? You miss out on all the tribal involvement.
Yeah, and you might go hungry and get cold and die.
Yeah. And then you have different kinds of involvement. It gets more complex. Any phrase that we cite, like tribal involvement, gets complexified once you realize the media history. There's a different kind of involvement in a literate society. It's the involvement of detachment. Everybody's involved in being detached and having an opinion based on data read,
mm-hmm.
or accumulated through reading. Then you have a renewed simulation of tribal involvement with the radio era. So back to this sentence. The spokesmen of censorious views are typical semi-literate, book-oriented individuals who have no competence in the grammars of newspaper or radio or a film, but who look askew and askance at all non-book media. There's the bias of a print society right there. They miss the importance of other media, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But that's the nature of a literate bias, is it does not see other media as environments that affects previous media, because they're stuck in obsession with the content of their literate media. The simplest, which would be books and newspapers, the simplest question about any psychic aspect, even of the book medium, in other words, the effects of them, of the medium, throws these people into a panic of uncertainty. He used to develop that later, late 60s. He said, the reason literate people don't like to look at media and study their dynamics is that it's an invasion of privacy, is what he would say. The private, isolated visual space ego is threatened with the idea of looking at its interaction with forms and environments, therefore wouldn't be so private, right?
Mm-hmm.
Private being kind of separate. Vehemence of projection of a single isolated attitude they mistake for moral vigilance. So the more keen you are in expressing one simple, one-level plane of experience or a point of view, and the stronger you are at that, which is what we have in talk radio day in and day out, is understood as being morally vigilant. That's moral. Waking up your ability to express a detached, non-involved point of view. Vehemence of projection of a single isolated attitude. They think that's moral vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
Once these literate censors, what he has here, once these censors became aware, and so he's saying if they did become aware, once these censors became aware that in all cases the medium is the message or the basic source of effects, they would turn to suppression of media as such instead of seeking content control. In other words, if people woke up to the effects of media, then they would realize they got to preserve the society, and they become very vehement in their moral vigilance in terms of shutting off other media. And that's what happened in the Soviet Union with Stalin. They retrieved medievalism with the Stalinist era, and they would not let any major media content come in other than print.
A lot of good it did them.
Yeah, it didn't work. You can't stop the media that way. But McLuhan is saying here that the literate person would think they could stop it if they became aware that media did that. But then the literate person, McLuhan would say, needs sensory training. It needs to become tactile and realize that since you can't stop media, you organize them like a global thermostat. You turn them on for 6 months, then bring them back on. You orchestrate them rather than get rid of them like a Luddite, or let them wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the new kind of aesthetic art. That was the new kind of art that McLuhan was asking for. Not the artist of painting or Jack Nicholson making movies or Bobby Orr doing hockey or any of these content activities, though they became popularized and were considered geniuses and artists, had nothing to do with the real mandate of the serious 20th century artist, which was to modulate with a sensibility training the forms and effects of media with that aesthetic awareness of not being censorious, appreciating the value of each media, but understanding how they work.
Problem is, in the more traditional arts, artist creates his art, does his performance, makes his music. The individual can, involve themselves in it or not.
And they didn't have a sense of individual.
But when you're turning on and off the media, you're imposing it. You're imposing this art on everyone. I can't think of a more, undemocratic, imposition of political will on humanity than something like that.
Well, that's a good question. When you talk about the individual audience member or spectator responding to art, remember the idea of an individual responding to art is a product of the Gutenberg era, a visual space before the Greek culture, which started to get into individual art. There was group art. It was group dance, group ritual. All right? So the literate person today, or living in the afterimage of literacy, as you say, conditioned as an American, where Wessner says, McLuhan is saying new media is art, and he's demanding my involvement in it. That's antithetical to my understanding of art. So the Westerner is unconscious of the values and bias of the individualist Gutenberg notion of art. So McLuhan was up against a lot of objections on this issue, I mean, I remember people saying, well, that media ecology, which is what it was called, is like blatant fascism. So the first thing I would say, well, he's not pro or anti-television. He's saying that these are parts of our new body, and we need to modulate them. Put on TV for 6 months, then take it off. The next thing you'd have to deal with is you have to put your audience into, well, whoever I was talking to, into perceptual training to realize that the literate values that they were operating on do not have an environmental impact anymore because we're totally tribal and post-tribal and discarnate. So you have to go through the perceptual training or brainwashing to get the ideas I've been trying to tell you at the beginning of our session tonight about what radio is and that the content of radio speech is not what radio really is. So there's a perceptual training that's required to see how the medium is the message. It, you know, the very point you're making here about, well, where's the individual freedom in this imposed environmental art form that McLuhan's doing? It's like programmed happening. If you think of McLuhan's definition of the individual as the individual is always the content. So humans are content. You are projecting a content view of his art, a literate content view. You're saying, hey, my individual content self does not want to be forced to be involved in a new media environment. So he's saying that kind of attitude needs to make the breakthrough to understand the medium as the message. Then they would be more interested in harmonizing it and developing the media environments to retrieve individual values or individual facts. Because you can't be an individual in the literate sense in the electric age.
That well, now here's a
that was McLuhan's point.
Yeah, here's an interesting something I just thought of actually that I never thought of before, which is that in the past I've heard you say that when the global electronic environment and you know becomes the envelope, you know humanity you know disappears, right? That's on your Bob's Media Ecology album. Everything's disappeared.
Right, but remember I said that's the complaint of an ad man. But just taking in just the idea, that's good enough, dealing with the idea, not whether I mean that.
Yeah, human beings are sitting on the sideline. Human beings become trivial.
The chemical body. That's chemical body.
Okay, the chemical body. Well, if the chemical body the individual point of view has become trivialized, then how come the chemical body and individual point of view, which is against media ecology, wins the day?
You mean how come McLuhan's point never gets across? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean if human beings have become trivialized within the matrix of this.
Oh, how does it?
If we have consecutive nested powers of matrixes of power, and human beings are at the low end of the food chain now, relative to the massive power of the global electric environment, then how can they still have the power to counter Marshall's desire to you know be able to, for media ecology?
And now we get into the idea of the meme. The meme resides. The collective meme of individuality is very powerful in the West. It's not what happens in other cultures. They don't even have these issues. Mm. They take China, mass communism, right?
Yeah.
So they have a different response to the electric environment. Then we get into the later digital environment, which actually retrieves the individual private bubble, little matrix iPod, right? So when you're dealing with my stuff, it's a later phase. McLuhan's dealing with the, we call it the mass media, one-way media phase. He predicted the little digital bubble, but The younger kids today in the West are totally programmed to being individualist, and they have the media to do it because the media is getting smaller, and it props up what they think is their chemical body, even though it's not the chemical body. It's more than that. Anyways, but without going into my stuff right now, let's go back to this. The meme of individuality survives in the United States or in North America, but what is the most hated culture in the world? United States, and it's because of the individualist meme, or the we'll call it the DNA of American media, good term, chief feature, the chief feature of American culture, is interacting with the majority of humanity, which is not as literate and industrialized, which is merging with electronic media, and believes in the group mode. That's what Castro and Chavez play on, and they consider the memes of their culture, the more tribal group-oriented cultures, as a more spiritual value, and call the individual memeous guy the devil, as we just saw last week.
Right.
So, yes, this is the clash of civilizations, but it should be the clash of cultural memes, which are old sensory biases. The kinetic meme, the visual kinetic American meme against the iconic tactile interface of Russia, the tactility of the Japanese, the proprioceptive of the Spanish, the strictly visual of the British, the acoustic of the French. Think of the French French battle with Bush over Iraq. There's a clash of... And they're not... They're memes. They're after images. Because we, none of us live in that. But only in the chemical body zone do these memes have a value, and they remain limited to their particular culture. Okay? You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the individualist meme does not survive in the rest of the world other than China's going capitalist. And they're starting to prop up gated communities in private a middle-class, wealthy bourgeois. So they're putting on the Western meme as they fight it. And just as we are putting on the electric, the tribal meme, that's what youth culture is all about, rock and roll, we put on the and hip-hop, the heroes of the urban ghetto at the communistic environment. And that is the illiterate and industrialized American black putting on the communistic, non-literate environment, calling it hip-hop, and fighting their own background. Just like the Chinese are putting on the Western values and fighting their own background.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's real complex, doesn't it? It's real mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the next paragraph goes into this question of fascism, imposing the new media. Here's what McLuhan says. You want to read that? It's from Understanding Media, page 275. Note all these quotes on this theme are in Understanding Media. He had this down, by the late 50s. Before he wrote Gutenberg Galaxy, he was looking at the global thermostat. After the satellite came in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Western way of life. Attained centuries since, that means we've had it for a long time, and it was maintained by the rigorous separation. Okay.
Western way of life attained centuries since by the rigorous separation and specialization of the senses, with the visual sense atop the hierarchy, is not able to withstand the radio and TV waves that wash about the great visual structure of abstract individual man. Those who, from political motives, would now add their force to the anti-individual action of our electric technology are puny subliminal automatons aping the patterns of the prevailing electric pressures.
I got to stop you here. Everything you're saying is what I just said the last 5 minutes.
Well, I know, evoked by my question, but I didn't even know I was about to read this.
Okay, continuing.
A century ago, they would, with equal somnambulism, have faced in the opposite direction. German Romantic poets and philosophers had been chanting in tribal chorus for a return to the dark unconscious for over a century before radio and Hitler made such a return difficult to avoid. What is to be thought of people who wish such a return to preliterate ways when they have no inkling of how the civilized visual way was ever substituted for tribal auditory magic?
Yeah, that last question is what I would throw at the hip-hop people. They wish to return to preliterate ways. They live preliterately when they have no inkling of how the civilized visual way was ever substituted for tribal auditory magic. It's like Chavez gets on there saying, we need, Bush is violating with his imperialistic devil means in violating the democratic principle. He claims he's putting democracy in Iraq, but he's just creating violence. We represent the real democracy. Now, that democracy that Chavez is talking about is a communalistic democracy, or the idea of communal participation, whereas the Western democracy is individual private points of view, equal before the law, voting on issues.
Yeah.
And so you have all these, pop culture heroes raising up values of individual creativity, individual expression, and democratic values, and against the fascist Bush. You can see just by the words I just said,
yeah,
they're loaded with these cultural memes and contradictions.
All of which sprang from visual space.
Yes, the whole thing came from visual space. And they're advocating through non-visual media visual values.
So this retribalization in the electric age
of the ghetto of the chemical body.
Yeah, it's not a true. It's a different tribal.
Yeah, we're not retribal. We are.
We have the individual meme.
We have the TV body was being built in McLuhan's era. Now, since he's been gone, we've had the digital body, which actually retrieves individual space, but it's not literate individual man. It's pod. Individual, isolated man.
Pod?
The iPod, the Matrix. Being in a pod. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In your little solipsistic bubble, which is what the medium will more do to people, the digital media. So that we have to talk about the TV body is what McLuhan is saying people aren't recognizing. But in our time, we got to deal with the digital body as well as the TV body. It's a different situation. That's why I'm considered to be the person updating McLuhan. I mean, someone posted this point on the media ecology list the other day. I'll get into that, tell you later privately about what came of that. But they actually have a thread there that says, is Bob Dobbs the new McLuhan? And this is among all the professors who don't have much interest in the way I go about things. So it's sort of funny. But it's actually posted by a person that knew Jerry or knew the Phineas Wake group and heard about me through then.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, when we're dealing with McLuhan, we can bring in my stuff, but we can understand and stay back in his dealing with the TV body. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go over this again. The Western way of life attained centuries since by the rigorous separation and specialization of the senses, which is what I've been saying for the last hour or more, with the visual sense atop the hierarchy, is not able to withstand the radio and TV waves that wash about the great visual structure of abstract individual man. Abstract individual man is the man of ideas caused by phonetic space, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get that?
Yeah.
And that is not there in terms of actual technical facts and weather that people live in. The weather is radio and TV waves that just destroy it, the ground of visual space or visual structure.
But individual man never went away, so he's still a product of this visual structure, which apparently is no longer there.
The individual man did go away. If you go back and...
No, we just established that the Western meme is the meme of the individual as opposed
right,
to the communism.
Right, and the meme is still here. That's an after image. But you gotta look at what people... As McLuhan said in the 60s, the battle over whether literacy was disappearing was an old battle in his day. It started in the 20s. You go back and read books and conventional thinkers, they thought that the end times had arrived with the radio effect. They didn't know it was radio, but they thought that all the values of this rugged individual American, Canadian, Westerner was disappearing in the effete, feminized world of the child cult. Tim Wyndham Lewis did a lot of writing about that. He seemed to be complaining about the new electric effect, but he was more sophisticated than that. But anyways, the point is that the abstract individual man had his crisis in the 20s under radio, and that's what Finnegan's Wake is about. It's about HCE, the private abstract individual family man, up against Finn, the tribal electric space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what we have now is an interesting meme. And I say that there is, since we all literally have disappeared, therefore it's the Android meme that's replaying the meme of individual man.
Mm.
Individual man. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that's my stuff. We're doing McLuhan here, which is sort of before the Android.
The Android meme is a collection of memes that self-organize into a director.
The Android meme is the technology taking on a life of its own and replaying the history of human technological evolution.
Mm-hmm.
In a rapid Moore's Law way. A new medium every 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so it replays, this is what my chart shows, it replays all the phases that happened when humans were creating them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it's like if you get enough collection of cells together, you end up with a human being. So you're saying you get enough collection of memes together, you end up with an Android meme?
No. The Android meme came out of the post-satellite digital era. It's a product of digital technology. Because digital technology mimes the merger of first and second nature. It's not the merger, that's called fusion, but it mimes it. So therefore, in that mime of merge, it can be tend in an ersatz way to separate and live a life of its own. So that the technology, since 1960, takes on a life of its own, or appears to be, because it has merged in terms of effects preceding causes with first nature. So ever since the early 60s, people have thought that technology is taking over. That's the cliche. People didn't feel that too much 100 years ago, or maybe even 80 years ago. They definitely started feeling it in the 60s. And that's because there actually was a fact of technology taking over, because it could tend to separate from first nature.
Remember that movie, The Stepford Wives?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the middle 70s.
Yeah, but you know, by then they're fantasizing that, you know, human beings have become
robots, yeah.
Well,
organic robotoids.
Yeah, right. And we've liberated ourselves from that idea. Technology's only gotten steeper since then, but we've liberated ourselves from that idea.
Yes, because the Android meme seduces people through the digital autonomy it gives to you and retrieves private identity as a meme, because the Android meme is making itself appear not here anymore. That's my main point. It's going invisible.
Right.
It's making people think through digital technology that massive media environments aren't controlling it anymore. So young people don't believe they're dominated by media anymore. That's a big step.